From the Alex Trebek stage at Sony Pictures Studios, this is Inside Jeopardy!
Hello and welcome everyone to this special edition of Inside Jeopardy! I'm host Sarah Foss, and I am joined by three of the most successful contestants, not just of season 38, but in all of Jeopardy history. Top three of five in the leaderboard of legends for most consecutive wins. We have Amy Schneider at 40 wins, Matt Amodio, 38-day champion, and Matea Roach, 23-day champion. Thank you all so much for joining us. Well, last night, for those who had the chance to watch it, we played what we're calling the Great Exhibition on Jeopardy. Some of you, we know your stations had to preempt it for the election coverage, so we wanted to make sure that you got to relive this experience, whether you saw it live or whether you're seeing the highlights with us today, because it was so much fun. Amy, I have to ask, what was your reaction when you first heard that we were going to do a game of Jeopardy where there were no stakes, really?
It was great. Well, I had first heard that, you know, just that y'all wanted to talk to me about something, and I got that text as I was getting on a plane. So I was just glad to hear it wasn't anything bad, first off. But yeah, no, I was really excited to, you know, get a chance to do something kind of unique that hadn't been done before.
And Matea, what was your reaction?
I think I felt kind of similarly, because when you get a text that's sort of, hey, we need to talk about something, I always go right back to school and like, oh my God, am I in trouble? Like, no, what would I possibly be in trouble for? But I was excited just to get the chance, first of all, to play a game against two of the best players of all time. Like, it's a huge honor, but also to get in a little bit of practice before taping our semifinals, because we were not going to get to compete in a quarterfinal. And I think, at least for my part, I was a little bit worried about being rusty going into semis against players that had just, you know, won a game.
Yeah, and that was part of our consideration. We thought, yes, we're seeding them into the semifinals, but does that put them at a disadvantage? Okay, we'll let them play a game against two of their peers who are also the best in the game. So I don't know how much of a leveling that was. Matt, what was your reaction?
Yeah, I had had a detailed conversation with my dad about the pros and cons of the seeding and the lack of a buzzer timing in the quarterfinal round did come up. And so I had already griped about this. And then you guys just went and preempted my ability to complain. So I was delighted to hear about it.
We always like to preempt any opportunity for any of our contestants to complain. So I'm glad that that worked out. First off, you know, Ken came out. He said, this is a game. We've never played anything like that. All three of you, just the way you were standing, it was just a different vibe. It seemed more relaxed. I know we revealed the categories. We had everything from Election Day, Hits of 2002, Lesser Known Geography, You Sit on It, Number Please, and finally, Remembering Alex Trebek. Were you guys aware heading in that this would be the two-year anniversary of his passing, this show we would do on Election Day?
Yeah, I remember when it was first sort of floated that there was going to be some kind of special episode to avoid the sort of Election Day preemption. I know one thing that a lot of Jeopardy viewers had remarked upon was that it was the two-year anniversary of his passing. And so, yeah, I wasn't surprised that, you know, the writers would have found a way to honor him just within the categories of the game.
Interestingly enough, we chose intentionally to not mention it on the one-year anniversary, because for those of us who knew Alex Trebek, he didn't want any fanfare. He didn't want it to be about him. He wanted it to be about all of you. And so we made a conscious choice, but we really heard from our viewers and our fans. They felt like we had somehow dishonored him. So on this second year anniversary, it was nice to be able to do something with the three of you, which I have to know he would have loved to see any of your runs. Matt, what was it like to play on that day for you?
Yeah, so I think I knew going in that would be the case, and I think that that's a testament to just how he's never far from our minds as contestants, definitely as people who work on the show. I know, and so it's just it's proof that he's still a living memory.
Well, here you are, the Alex Trebek stage. We kick off the game, Matea. First up with Nickelback, your Canadian roots helping you out there.
We want to remind you that the number one song of 2002 was How You Remind Me by this Chad Kroeger group. Matea.
What's Nickelback?
Yes, Canada's proud.
Yeah, I feel like there's a bit of pressure anytime there's any sort of Canadian content on the show. If I don't successfully ring in, people at home are like, what's going on? Like, why don't they know that? So yeah, I was happy to be able to snag some CanCon to start the game.
And Matt, your first chance to ring in, you just wanted to say hello to Ken.
On election night 1948, the Chicago Tribune went to press with this banner headline for the next morning's edition. Matt.
Hi, Ken.
Hey.
I just wanted to say hi. What's Dewey defeats Truman?
That is the headline, yes.
Yeah, you know, I had planned ahead of time that I wanted to just take the moment and say hi to Ken in a way he deserves. But then it occurred to me that, oh, geez, what if I don't get in until like after the commercial break? At that point, it's not going to be it's not going to have the same meaning. So I was glad that I got in towards the beginning. And the plan was for me to just use my entire time. I was going to not respond to the clue at all, and just say that. But you know, it was an American political history question, so it's my favorite category as well, and I just couldn't resist. So at the end, I threw in the correct response as well.
I was really impressed with your timing on that. I thought there's no way he's going to be able to say that and get in with the form of a question, but you did. Well done. All right, this next category, I think, mainly because of you, Amy, and you, Matea, was my favorite. Let's play a clip from the hits of 2002.
Hits of 2002, four.
Give us the title of this Nelly song that heated up all the way to number one. But please, don't take off all your clothes, even in a rehearsal game. Matea.
What's hot in here?
Right.
2002, 600.
This dance anthem by Pink says, we'll be looking flashy in my Mercedes-Benz. Matt.
What's hot in here?
No. Amy.
What is I'm coming out?
No. Matea.
What is get the party started?
There we go.
One of my favorite songs from when I was like four. 2002, eight.
Wow.
2002, 1000.
Lose Yourself has the meta lyrics, and there's no movie. There's no this actor. This is my life. Amy.
Who is Mekhi Phifer?
Good for 1000.
All right. One of my favorite songs when I was 27.
Oh, I love it so much. We know that Lose Yourself was one of those songs that you sang to yourself before every game. No accident that the writers put that in there. How did it feel to get it correct and then get to give Matea a little zinger there?
Oh, it was, I don't know that I've ever wanted to ring in on a clue more, ever. Like, you know, because first of all, I've been hoping the whole rest of the category to get in on one, because I thought of that joke after Matea, like, did their joke. And so I wanted to get that in, although I was too preoccupied to do the math, so I was really, like, a little, I'm not quite that old. But, yeah, and then so, like, then it was, you know, Lose Yourself, and, you know, if I hadn't had that other joke queued up, I was going to continue on with the lyrics, you know, but I chose not to.
Matea, did you, like, hesitate at all before you said when I was, like, four?
No, because, it's Sarah, I was not exaggerating. Like, it actually was one of my favorite songs, and I was so frustrated. Like, you can see in the video, I'm, like, just trying desperately to get in on the buzzer, and I thought surely when Amy came in after Matt that I wasn't going to get to ring in, but I actually had, I think, like, two separate mix CDs that had been made for me by two different people that both had that song on it, and so I was like, I need to ring in on this clue, and it just came out of my mouth, and as soon as I said it, I was like, oh, no, I just called everyone else on stage old, and I didn't even mean to.
Yes, well, we love you so much, and you did it with such care and compassion that even I was doing the math with you, Amy, because we're similar in age, and I was like, I don't think we were 27, but we were certainly not four, so.
I will just add that I was unable to participate in that joke at all because the entire concept of listening to current music is so beyond me. I really, there are so many songs that I dislike when they're popular, and then 20 years later, maybe 10 years later, I'm able to, with the benefit of space, give a fair shot, and so most of my listening is still stuck in at like 95 at the most recent at the moment.
Factor's ready-to-eat meals make eating better every day easy. When my schedule gets busy, it's nice to have pre-prepared, chef-created, and dietitian-approved meals delivered right to my door. With over 35 different options a week to choose from and over 55 nutrition-packed add-ons, make your weekly meal planning even more delicious and easy with Factor. Plus, Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Get started today and have a feel-good week of meals ready to go. Head to factormeals.com/Jeopardy50 and use code Jeopardy50 to get 50% off. That's code Jeopardy50 at factormeals.com/Jeopardy50 to get 50% off.
Fun was also had during the contestant interviews.
Tell us about some of the perks of your Jeopardy fame, Matea. Have you got to do anything cool?
Yeah, so at one point I actually got invited to a magazine's fundraising gala in Toronto, and I was seated at a table with Margaret Atwood. Wow. I didn't chat with her a lot, but at one point she kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, you have to see this." And someone else at the table had worn socks with an illustration of her face on it. And then on the sole of the foot, it was a handmaid from The Handmaid's Tale. So I guess if you get famous enough in Canada, people show up at galas where you're going to be with socks with your face on them. I don't know. I'm not there yet.
And Justin Trudeau texted you.
He didn't text me. He tweeted about
me.
Very important.
I love how Canadian all your stories are.
I'm
Degrassi now hang out with me, Ken. That's fantastic. Welcome back. Matt Imodio, now a postdoctoral researcher from Cambridge, Massachusetts. What about you? Tell me how great it is to be Matt Imodio today.
Yeah, so I started out throwing out the first pitch at a minor league baseball game. I got promoted, threw out the first pitch at a major league baseball game.
Hey.
But now I am standing on the stage with a Jeopardy goat, who I have to correct because I think I would have gotten my PhD even without the whole Jeopardy thing.
You don't think Jeopardy really gives you a leg up in your defense?
I hope not.
Fair enough. Amy Schneider is now a writer from Oakland, California. Tell us about some of your adventures since your Jeopardy run.
The one that stands out is definitely getting to visit the White House. I was not able to meet with the president, but I met Doug Emhoff, the second gentleman, and I was there for Trans Day of Visibility, and so they asked me to stand at the podium of the White House press briefing room and say a few words. And they told me repeatedly that there would not be any questions from the audience, for the reporters.
Yeah.
Then I got up there, I said my few words, they started asking questions, and I said, well, I've seen The West Wing. I can do this. I just started answering the questions. It was really great.
That's a fantastic story and a great way to one-up Matt's minor league Akron baseball story. Oh, you threw out a first pitch in Akron. I missed it. I was at the White House.
I hope you didn't throw anything there.
I enjoyed that Ken was able to rouse us a little bit more than he might be able to on the regular show with other contestants, just because he knows we can take it, right? So I remember there was actually one time during my regular season run, I think we had to cut Ken making a joke at my expense, even though I thought it was really funny. And I was kind of sad that we cut it. It was something about, I didn't ring in on a clue about Buffalo Springfield and Neil Young. And he was like, come on, Matea, you should have gotten it. That's the CanCon again. But we had to cut it.
Well, we didn't cut anything from this episode, which brings up my next favorite clip. I don't even think Ken knows yet that the number patterns, numbers please, category played just the way it played on the show. Let's take a look back.
Number four.
Normally, the human body contains this number of chromosomal pairs. Amy.
What is 23?
That's correct. I don't know if you noticed, but the numbers in that category, 40, 23, 38, and 74, which is larger than all of them.
No.
Oh, we'll just pretend. Amy, select again.
I'll do number, please, for 200.
Let's see if you know this one. Matthew 4 says Jesus fasted for this many days and nights in the wilderness, and he was hungry after. Well, yeah. Matt.
What's 40?
That's correct. Now, I suspect you didn't notice this. The numbers that were the responses in that category, 40, 23, 38, and then 74, which is larger than any of them, may be of specific relevance to your Jeopardy streaks.
So this was an idea of Rocky Schmidt, our supervising producer. He was like, we have to come up with this category that relates to all of your streaks. Before Ken's flub, had you picked up on it at all, or were you just kind of in the moment of the category?
The number 74 means something to me, and it's not outside of the context of Jeopardy. So I flagged it in my mind there.
Maybe when I had seen 40, I think maybe if he hadn't flubbed, if I had seen the last clue, perhaps. But I think I was just too fixated on completely not knowing at all the responses for the clues for 74 and 38.
I think that never remember a clue after it's gone. At the end of a game, I'm like, I have no idea what questions I answered or anything like that. So yeah, I did not pick up on the pattern in the slightest, no.
Well, one thing we learned on The Great Exhibition is that yes, Ken Jennings swears.
It did occur to me also, though, that I had done a few gestures that are related to the flub that may have spilled over into the next question. So I was holding out my buzzer saying, like, look, I know what the next one's going to be. And then I also made a special laugh, I guess I would say, after giving the clue. And so I was wondering whether it was going to air as is. And because we had that spillover into the other clues, I knew you guys probably had to air it.
Edit it out, but yeah. It was just such a genuine moment, you know, great. Like you can hear all of us yelling from the judges' table, no, and then he fixed it, but I loved it. I think it's really great on a game like this that there isn't so much at stake, that you're becoming a day more of a champion isn't on the line, or advancing in the semis or anything like that, that we can really just have fun. And this was one of those moments where thank you for being part of what I will remember as one of my funnest moments in the studio.
Alex's breakfast of choice was a Diet Coke and a Snickers. After a doctor's lecture, Diet Pepsi and this Gimme a Break candy bar. Amy.
What is Kit Kat?
Had you guys ever heard about Alex's breakfast of champions that we talked about? Was this new to you? Because nope. This was true. I mean, for all the years with the Diet Coke and the Snickers, and then he changed it after all those years to a Diet Pepsi and a Kit Kat. But that was Alex, and I love that we were able to get that in. Even his love of tools. You guys had a tough time with that tool. I mean, I love that you all went in for it.
For back 1,000.
Alex had tons of hardware supplies, including these, also called half moon keys. He never knew what they were for, though. Matt.
What's semi-lunars?
No. Amy.
What's demi-loon?
No. Mateo wants
to... What are hemi-loons?
Apparently they are woodruff keys, apparently. You were all each not close to that.
Yeah, I know there are things that are shaped like a half moon and are called semi-lunar because of it. I think you have valves in the heart, for example, and so why not take a shot? I didn't expect you two to come in and think I was on the right track, but what can you do? Not my fault.
The picture meant nothing to me whatsoever, and the you know, correct answer when it was revealed still meant nothing to me whatsoever, so, you know, might as well take a shot.
For me, it was purely, just the opportunity to say what I knew would be a third wrong answer, but to, you know, again... When you see an opportunity for a joke in a game like this, I think you have to take it.
Well, and Alex always said he loved the tools in his shop, in his garage, and he was honest. He didn't know what half of them were or what they did, so I think even Alex may have missed that clue. Moving on, we head now into Double Jeopardy. We've got the categories Hope You Read Middlemarch. We'll always have the Treaty of Paris, movie quotes, potpourri, rhymes with a Snow White dwarf, and wrong but excellent. Matt, what was your reaction when you saw those Double Jeopardy categories? You were all obviously, in a pretty good position, but hoping to maximize on them.
Yeah, I have read about Middlemarch, which I thought might be enough, but unfortunately found out not. And then I feel like I was deprived as a child, where I don't have much association with the Seven Dwarves. If I take a second, I can list all of them, but it's not just like naturally in there. So I was hoping I could use the actual clue and then say, does it end in a Y? Okay, sounds good. But I found out that it's a little harder than that in both cases.
Mateo, what was your reaction to those Double Jeopardy categories? Really close coming out of the Jeopardy round. So this was, a chance to move ahead, which you did maximize on.
Well, unlike Matt, I have not even read about Middlemarch, so my reaction to that category was basically, I hope the Daily Double is not in there. Some of the others I thought, Treaty of Paris could be okay. Rhymes, I generally like rhymes, and I actually don't even know if I've ever watched Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, but I was a bit more confident perhaps on my ability to name dwarves, and so I thought that might be all right. But mainly at the time that we were going into Double, like, I was just happy to be on relatively even footing, which was not necessarily what I expected coming into the game. I thought I might get trounced, to be totally honest. So, yeah, I just thought I'll give it my best shot, and I definitely tried to daily double hunt in this game a lot more than anybody saw me do in the regular season. You saw I kind of started, I think, with the $2,000 or $1,600 clues. So, yeah, that was my attitude.
It worked. Amy, how about your reaction to those categories?
They were interesting. I do like the idea that from Matea that naming dwarves is a, you know, skill that came in handy in your life at any point. I like the Treaty of Paris. I like the history and stuff. And I thought that the Middlemarch one was just funny because, of course, nobody's read Middlemarch. Like, nobody's read it in the last 50 years. So what are we doing here? But that was fun.
What are we doing here? It's my mom, who's a English PhD's favorite book. And so I had a little bit of an education when I got home after after that. And then I also, I'll add on the last category, wrong but excellent. I thoroughly love that because I actually remember some of the specific incidents that the category's clues were referring to. I think the Laclade was one of them, and Galen was another, where when I first heard them, I'm not sure I even knew who they were. And so I said, okay, well, I should go look into this. This is something a contestant clearly knows,
wow.
Or at least something about.
We love to hear you're doing your research on those long-lost clues. Matea, your daily double hunting obviously went well. You get the first daily double, and you wager some amount of magic beans. I loved that.
Well, I was like, we're not playing for money, so I don't know. Maybe, what is it that, I'm thinking of Jack and the Beanstalk, but I completely don't remember the plot. I guess he sells the cow for magic beans. That's what happens in Jack and the Beanstalk. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I can grow a really tall beanstalk with my winnings from this game.
You sure can. And then you found your category. Let's take a look at Potpourri for Matea.
Potpourri 2000.
Seen here is this famous madam, an official mistress of Louis XV and a patron of the arts. Matea.
Who's Madame de Pompadour?
Right.
Potpourri 16.
The name of this London airport goes back to Anglo-Saxon words meaning goat farm. Matea.
What's Gatwick?
Yes.
Potpourri 12.
Inky, Blinky, Pinky, and Clyde are the ghosts in this classic video game. Matea.
What's Pac-Man?
Right again.
Potpourri 8.
Don't get mad and blow this part of many machines. A flat ring used to tightly seal a joint. Matea.
What's Gasket?
Yes.
Potpourri 4.
Because its hundreds of seeds are on the outside, this berry isn't considered a true berry. Matea.
What's a strawberry?
That's correct. You have found your category. Potpourri, it turns out. Select again.
Matea, I have to think, I know how you were feeling in this moment, but I have to ask, Amy, what were you thinking? Because you've been on the other side where you just get a category, you get into your rhythm, and you are just locked in on the buzzer. That was happening for Matea. What was your reaction at this point?
I was definitely feeling a bit frustrated at not getting in, but like I also, like, there would always be little stretches where I felt that way, and I, you know, got, you know, it didn't bother me too much, and I just thought it was hilarious, the, you know, you found your category and it's potpourri. It was just so ridiculous.
How about for you, Matt?
Yeah, so I know that there are these stretches where you lose the buzzer or you get the buzzer. And frankly, that from a competitive point of view, I'm always happy when they are running a category rather than running a bottom row. So I was fine losing out on a couple of $400 questions.
Matea, you said you were surprised to be kind of in it after the Jeopardy round ended. What were you thinking at this point?
I was extremely surprised that I had at all a run of buzzer timing like that. And it is really funny that it happened in Potpourri. Like, Potpourri is a category that I think you're, like, never really excited to see. Or, you know, there's not going to be a daily double in there. Typically, you don't really have any idea what the actual clues are going to be about. So you're not really able to gauge, is this going to be a strong category for me or not? And so I just found it very bizarre that of all, like, I think it's the weirdest category I've ever run in a game of Jeopardy, just because, first of all, I'm against, you know, two fantastic players who were certainly trying to get in on the buzzer, right? So it's not like I'm just racking up really obscure clues that nobody else knows. But then it's also this category that I completely had no idea what was going to be in there when I started playing it. So, yeah, I was, you can tell on my face at the end of it, I just kind of, like, can't believe what has just happened.
Well, Matt alluded to the Seven Dwarves category a little earlier. Another one of my favorite moments was watching the three of you play this category. Let's take a look at the highlight from that one.
Dwarf 2000.
Make it this adjective that also means attractively and fashionably dressed. Matt.
What's Tony?
No. Amy.
What is snappy?
Yeah, rhymes with happy.
Snow White Dwarf 16.
Inclined to be tearful or a sentimental film. Matt.
What's sappy?
No. Matea.
What's weepy?
Yes, rhymes with sleepy. They're all going to rhyme with the same dwarf, Matt. Collect again, Mateo.
Oh, he had to call you out on that one.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, you don't have a lot of dwarf knowledge.
That's true. And I do remember a category in the recent past where they all rhymed with happy. And so when the first one came in, I said, oh, that's got to be the direction we're going in. And that's not the direction they were going in. Okay.
Well, it was a tough Final Jeopardy. You guys all together, you got it all correct. But let's take a look back at Final Jeopardy of the Great Exhibition.
Chemical element names is the Final Jeopardy category of our special exhibition game. Here's the clue. The three elements whose names begin with two vowels are iodine and these two, one synthetic and one natural. 30 seconds. Good luck. Matt Amodio, in the middle and still writing. What did he come up with? What are einsteinium and then I think eulerium, like Leonard Euler?
Euler.
That's not correct. Brutal Final Jeopardy question. You got half of them. You have $3,600. Amy Schneider was in second place. Which elements did she think of?
Not
what are europium element. And blank? Well, I think between the two of you, you have the makings of a pretty good response there. But you're going to lose $64.96, leaving you with $904. Mateo Roach had the lead after a strong game. What was their response? What are europium and einsteinium putting it together? That's correct. You wagered nothing, leaving you with $17,600. Congratulations. You've won our Jeopardy! TOC exhibition match.
So I have to ask, were you surprised that in a great exhibition, we're going along, we're having so much fun, that the final was so hard? What were your thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, I know most of the elements, not all of them, and I certainly can't just name them off. And so I was just starting to think of two vowel combinations. Eventually, I started writing them down, as you can see on the board, saying like, does it look like anything maybe? And I felt a little disappointed with myself afterwards, but it was a fun clue.
Amy, for you, you may not have gotten the whole clue correct, but you did have a chance to wager $64. We learned June 4th, Genevieve's birthday. So it was a win in some ways, right?
In some ways, yes. I was 100% convinced that I had made up europium and that it wasn't a real element. So that was a surprise. And I was going to say about the clue itself, I found it uncomfortably close to asking what's the only country that ends in H.
How about for you, Mateo? You had a runaway, and now you even got final correct.
Yeah, it was kind of like the cherry on top of the game, I guess, because when I saw the category, I was like, well, I'm toast. Like, the elements, no. I stopped taking science in school basically as soon as I could possibly, and I also don't
when
feel
When you
like
were
it,
four?
Not when I was four. I had to take it up until, I guess I could have stopped a little bit sooner. I took it until the end of high school. But in any case, europium, I was sure was a real thing. Like, I wrote that down right away. And then I think because I had one immediately, I very much did what Matt did and just started thinking, okay, what are different two-letter combinations? And fortunately, EI is not too far into the alphabet. So just in the nick of time, I think if I'd thought of it any later, I might not have been able to write the whole word down. But I thought, you know, even if this isn't right, it's at least a very serviceable guess. And then, of course, when I saw Matt's response and then Amy's response get revealed, I was like, huh, this is two parts of the answer that I wrote down. I might have something here.
Well, for everyone watching, you played this game the day before you were going to come out for your semifinals. So was it as much fun to play as it was for us to watch, knowing that you still had the pressure of the semis coming the very next day, but that this really was just for fun? Amy, how about for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there was a part of my head that, like, leading up to it was like, you know, is there some sort of, like, mental game to be played here that I should be doing? But then I was eventually just like, no, just, you know, play it how you play it, and either you'll do well and they'll be intimidated, or you'll do bad and they'll be lulled into a false sense of security. So it'll all be fine.
Yeah, so I thought about this quite a bit. And so I went in with the strategy that this is mostly for buzzer practice, and I am going to buzz in 60 times, or well, daily doubles, that 57 times and get the maximum amount of buzzer practice that I can. And I knew going in that would mean that I have some embarrassing incorrect guesses for times that I win the buzzer and don't know the answer. And I was worried that that would come off poorly. And so with the game ending up being so fun, I think that it just fed into the fun atmosphere. And so I was really happy that it wasn't going to be everybody else taking it seriously and Matt ruining it with his weird strategy.
Matt did not ruin the great exhibition. Matea, what are your thoughts?
I was very nervous going into the game that if I played really poorly, or not even if I played poorly, but if I was trying to get in on the buzzer and the timing just wasn't working and I ended up like way behind, that it might sort of affect my mindset going in to play the semis the next day. So I just thought, okay, you know, have fun. I think John Barra, like the contestant producer, was saying before we all went up on stage, you know, remember to have fun. Like, you guys should be having fun. And I was like, John, you've seen me play this game like 24 times now. When have I not had fun on stage? Like, that's the one thing I know for sure I'll be able to do. So yeah, I mean, I didn't try to use it for buzzer practice because I thought that that would sort of affect my mindset in a negative way. And I didn't want during my semifinal to be buzzing in on things I didn't know. But yeah, I mean, I think left the studio after taping this game feeling pretty good about how things might play out the next day.
Well, who knows if next season when we do our Tournament of Champions, we will have a field like we have this year. If we have three, I don't even know what to call you because it's so far past super champions in the field and we seed them in the semis. Do you advise that we do another great exhibition if we end up in this position again?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that was like just it's a gift I want to give to these hypothetical future contestants. It was really great.
Yeah, for the three people participating, I think it's going to be great fun, and then I hope for the audience watching it as well.
Yeah, 100%. If you have a field like this one, if you need to do a weird tournament structure, highly advise doing this again because it was maybe the most fun I've ever had up on that stage.
Well, we're not going to spoil it for anyone if we see the three of you again in the finals, but we can't wait to watch each of your semifinals. Thank you so much for joining us on this special edition of Inside Jeopardy, and thank you for just the incredible contribution you have been to our show, to our past season, and to the legacy. We are so proud to have the three of you as our leaderboard of legends. Thank you.
Thank you.